You look great. Let's rent a car and get out of this madhouse. There was so much I wanted to talk to her about, but it took me a few moments to recover from my surprise and excitement at seeing her appear at the airport to meet me. I didn't know where to start. Rama, always logical and full of common sense, calmed me down, saying, "Chucho, we have all day." She was wearing shorts, leather sandals, a man's shirt tied at the waist and a scarf on her head. As usual, nothing about her would lead anyone to suspect that she could be a humanoid from another planet. While we ate, I told her about the Peruvian horse deal that had made it possible for me to be back in Peru. "If everything goes according to schedule," I said, "I should be going back to the United States by the end of March. I have a list of horses to hunt down all over the place. Would you like to go with me?"
"Sure, why not?
That'll give us plenty of time together. In the next few days you take care of your business locally. When you're ready to begin your search, come to the medicinal baths and we'll travel looking for your horses. How's the book doing?"
"I'm working out my notes, starting to make a skeleton copy.
Is there any deadline as to when you would like to have it written and on the publisher's desk?"
"Well, I'm pretty sure it's going to be around the middle of 1976, but since our mission in this world is a joint effort, we'll have to consult with my brothers."
"Don't worry, you have plenty of time. Our sessions, as you call them, that we're going to have from here on in, are not to be written in this book of yours."
"I don't understand."
"Why?"
"Because we're methodical in our contact with Earth's intelligences. Just as you had to do a lot of work and study on what is yet to come, people have to make some preparations to meet extraterrestrials. By intelligent and careful observations as you have done. In other words, you don't want to contact people who aren't yet prepared to meet you. I'm talking about the psychological attitude of people when the existence of flying saucers as vehicles and intelligences from other worlds gets to be common knowledge." I really didn't understand why Rama wanted me to take my story only so far at that time, but as the year of 1975 went by I began to see why Rama had cautioned me about this. We spent the rest of the day together, making love, talking, and strolling on the beach like two lovers. January in Lima is the beginning of summer, and that evening, when the sun went down, Rama asked me to drive her to a nearby resort where I was going to drop her off to get her vimana. We went to a deserted area along the ocean. There was a cliff of about 500 feet. I got the car as close to the edge as possible. Before she left, Rama and I made plans to see each other up in the Andes Mountains in a few days, as soon as I straightened out my situation in Lima. A few minutes after Rama had gotten out of the car, I heard a smooth metallic sound and witnessed the sudden departure of a flying disc. In moments it was lost in outer space, traveling at a fantastic speed. In the next few days, I took care of several business matters around Lima, and scheduled a plan of action for contacting people who had Peruvian horses for sale. Around mid-January, 1975, I went back to Acaya. The trip was treacherous. Even though it was now the summer season, when you drive 2 hours into the Andes Mountains, you encounter winter, with rain, snow and mud. The main central highway had become even worse than the last time I had traveled this road. It took me almost 6 hours to make the same trip that in September had taken me only 4. The only thing that was an improvement was I didn't have any altitude sickness this time. I got up early the next morning, fresh and rested, and checked my watch. It was 6:30, Tuesday, January 14. It was raining copiously, but I went down to the bathhouses anyway. I was looking forward with great anticipation to getting into that carbonated water again. It felt so good I stayed in the pool for about an hour. As I was having breakfast after my bath, I noticed a pickup truck dropping off someone. It was Rama. She'd hitchhiked a ride to meet me. "A UFO was waiting for us nearby," she said. I couldn't believe my ears. Today I was going to take my first ride in a spaceship. We got into the Volkswagen and drove about 15 minutes toward Huangeo. We came to a clearing, where she asked me to pull off the road. We got out of the car and Rama took me by the arm, leading the way. By then the rain had let up. As we walked, I saw something that resembled a small rainbow, very weak in intensity. She told me this was an electromagnetic field that surrounds the UFOs completely, thus making them invisible while standing on the ground. We were no more than 25 feet from the craft, and my eyes didn't see it. After we crossed the electrical frequency, it came into full view. This ship wasn't like the small Vimanas I'd seen previously. It had the same form and football-like shape, but it was much larger. It was metallic and seemed to have a silverish glow around it. As we approached the vehicle, which was resting on three metallic legs, Rama asked me to take off my shoes. I thought about Moses doing something so many years ago on top of Mount Sinai. Rama explained that since my shoes were wet from the rain, and since water is a conductor of electricity, this would prevent me from getting a shock when I went into the ship. We were both given a pair of shoes, similar to sandals, made out of heavy wood. It looked more like cork. We climbed up a metal ladder that descended from a circular door. As I entered, I experienced a sudden change of temperature. It was a bit colder than the already cold Andes Mountains. The same kind of feeling one gets when entering an air-conditioned building, only somehow this was stranger. Two crew members, about 4.5 to 5 feet tall, greeted us in silence. They were wearing one-piece suits made of a shining gray material. It covered them from head to toe. There was no doubt they were humanoids. I began to feel extremely nervous and uncomfortable, an almost creepy feeling, even though they were extremely peaceful in their attitudes. I sensed I was safe with them, but still the fear of the unknown held me back. As soon as I advanced two more steps, I came face to face with the crew leader, standing inside an oval room about 25 feet in length, 15 to 20 feet wide, with about a 7-foot ceiling. Illumination came from all over the room, a red glow with a touch of orange. The crew leader had a nice face, with a benevolent expression. He had a long nose and slanted eyes that were elongated and extended around to the side of his head. I noticed he had no eyelashes and he didn't blink. But there was definitely eye activity. It took me a little while to figure out what made those eyes seem so alive. Then I noticed that his pupils narrowed and widened as he communicated with me. He got up from a triangular chair that was in front of some control panels, and walked over to receive us. Rama and the crew leader exchanged glances. It seemed as though the two of them had planned this visit. When he looked at me, I instinctively walked with him toward the control panel. His mouth tended to be still, but I could hear muffled words and sentences. It sounded as though he had a heavy accent. Sensing that I had difficulty understanding him, he changed his mode of communication. Suddenly, I could hear his voice speaking to me inside my head, the same as when Rama and I had our mind-to-mind chats. He showed me around the craft. The instrument panels looked like a console one would find in a computer room. There were portholes all around the craft and my host told me that we were in an observation UFO, with a crew of 4. Up to this moment, I'd seen only 2. By flicking a switch, a screen-like device lit up and we were able to see outside the spaceship where the other 2 crew members were. "Where do you come from?" I asked. "We're from a galaxy not too far from here," he said. He opened a scroll and I could see an oval map with many kinds of dots on it. He pointed at a group of stars, which he identified as the constellation of Taro, star Alcyone, the Pleiades. He located our own sun, then he showed me his home planet on the map, which appeared to be nothing more than a bunch of dots to me. He told me they had bases on Mars and Venus. "What about here on Earth?" I asked. "Not our bases, but UFO bases that all of us are cooperatively keeping here on Earth. It's our mission as peaceful intelligences to maintain the balance of the universe. With our terrestrial bases, we can keep an eye on you. In a few minutes, we're going to see one of the bases here in South America, but first you must tell Rama where you want your car. I turned to Rama, who was observing my reactions, and told her I was supposed to go to a city called Trujillo and another called Chiclayo, both located on the northern coast of Peru, 500 miles north of Lima. Somehow they hooked the VW up to the UFO. I could see it on the screen. The thought hit me, what would the car rental company think if they knew that one of their cars made the 800-mile trip to Chiclayo in about 9 minutes? When we were ready for takeoff, Ramu exchanged some information with the crew leader, then I was placed between them. This machine is operated through reversible electromagnetism. She explained. See those columns going to that rotor that looks like transparent plastic? Yes, I said, nodding. Well, those are reactors. When the mercury in that rotor gets going at full speed, we can reverse the magnetic and electrical energy. That way we can control matter and also overcome the forces of gravity. When we took off, I felt a great force pulling my face muscles back. Even my arms and shoulders were pushed flat against the chair. Rama told me not to worry because that was due only to the great speed we were experiencing. We hovered for a while over an old road that led to the Pan American Highway, near a little town not far from the city of Chiclayo. I didn't get out of the aircraft. The crew unloaded the VW, and Rama said we would leave it there for an hour or two. Later she and I would come back in a Vernana, which was a smaller craft enough for two or three people. We ascended again, but at a lesser speed, flying over the Andes Mountains, once more at an extreme altitude. I could see some commercial jetliners way below us as tiny specks of light, their surfaces and expanded wings reflecting the sun. As we descended gradually, I saw in the distance a great expanse of water. Rana said it was the Titicaca Lake and that we would be entering it. My eyes opened wide as I saw the lake approaching. I was expecting some kind of crash or a marked change as we penetrated the surface tension of the water, but it was a smooth entry, nothing resembling a crash. We traveled underwater, the UFO navigating like a sophisticated submarine, until we came to a UFO base under the lake, which was like a whole city. The crew leader said this was the base that Rana had told me about when I first met her. Suddenly we were in the air again. The only sensation I felt during this transition was a slight change in density. As we flew through the clouds, I saw ice-covered mountains in the distance. I recognized them as the icy peaks found about 25 miles from Huancayo and saw the Mantaro Valley with its river slicing through the center of it. We landed close to the ice peaks, where Rana's Vernana was waiting for us. I thanked the crew leader for the tour. He said we would see each other again in a few days. Rama and I flew to Chiclayo then, in a Vimana that had been left hidden behind some sand hills. When we returned to where the car had been left earlier, I was still in a daze. It was hard to believe I had flown in two UFOs. It had been the experience of my life. Chapter 16. Finally believing. Our horse hunt was great. In 2 days I managed to photograph every possible horse that Roy might want to buy, plus a few extra I'd found on my own. Roy had given me an XL70 Polaroid camera, which produced color photographs within minutes. As if this process weren't speedy enough, Rama suggested we get in the Vimana, hit the U.S., and drop them off at some mailbox. That way, Roy would have the photos the next day. When she mentioned this, I had a better idea. Why don't we take them to Roy directly? I asked. Rama gave me one of her sad looks and told me to remember what the crew leader had told me about motherships and terrestrial UFO bases. You must realize that some people in your world can't handle things like that. We don't mind telling you where our bases are located, but I asked you when you came to Peru not to reveal this information. Other people, other contactees, will take care of getting that to the media. What do you mean, other contactees? People like you who'll be contacted now and in years to come. When we talked about the Silence Group, you remember we said a lot about UFO information being restricted by the media. There are, however, two organizations in the US, APRO and NICAP, who work to disseminate this kind of information.
Yes, I know. Aerial Phenomena Research Organization and the National Committee on Aerospatial Phenomena. I checked them both very thoroughly as soon as I got back to the States.
I came across another such organization, MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network of Quincy, Illinois. There are so many books on UFOs that I 338 would have been convinced even if I'd never met you or had this experience.
Good.
Now I want you to listen to me and pay attention, because this is important. The purpose of writing this book is not the reporting of UFO sightings. From now on, you and my friends from other worlds are going to be seeing a lot of each other. You'll be getting in and out of spacecraft, you'll see mother ships and more of our UFO bases on Earth. Don't write about it, because most of it has been written already. Besides, you said yourself that they wouldn't believe you anyway.
That's right. What I'd like you to do is write about our conversations.
Let's hope those few who choose to believe you, do so out of conviction, after they've corroborated it with the reading suggestions we're going to give them. Maybe then they'll be able to accept that some people, human beings from other planets, are already here to fight evil forces that are working to take full control of your planet. That's the purpose of the message.
I see. I was already thinking how I could actually sit down and write the things that happened this morning, flying all over America in minutes. You and I are going to be studying some more. Now you have two advantages, one your astral projection, and the other the fact that we can move freely in our own vimana.
Oh, wow. I really enjoy that. Why did I get so lucky?
You've earned it by taking the time to check it out.
You didn't expect me to write about these experiences without checking them thoroughly, did you?
I consider myself to be a serious person and very straight with my work.
Remember, I'm a journalist.
Yes, I know that. My friends know that.
But some people in your world think you're a suspicious character, and a con man.
I read you loud and clear.
To some people I'm the biggest idiot. But that's part of my cover. I actually enjoy putting on a show to make people think I'm ignorant. Then I get a thrill when they find out otherwise.
I know what you mean.
Now, going back to your friend Roy, I don't think it would be a good idea to take the pictures to him by Vimana.
Why not?
Because I feel someone is going to set you against Roy.
Come on, Rimmel, not with Roy. He's the only reason I was able to come back to Peru.
These horses are his, and I'm the only man who can get them out of Peru in no time.
You'll see.
He's very interested in seeing this book of ours written.
He's going to help me with it.
He's even offered to let me stay at his ranch in Ohio while I write, so I can have peace and quiet.
Do you know what he got me for Christmas?
Let's see.
Never mind.
Not fair reading minds.
Among other things, you got a book you wanted badly.
Satan in the Sanctuary.
You'll see, he was definitely touched by it.
When it happens, you'll see.
But don't worry about it, just continue living, loving God and your neighbor, live in harmony with everyone and your wishes will come true.
I always act in good faith. What you call being a good Christian is what I call being a gentleman.
If Roy does a number on me, I'll continue praying by making teddy bear images with life, shape and movement.
Then you spray, and boom. They become real.
Your spiritual counterparts, patron saints, spiritual guides, they, through you, make the aerosol can labeled thought materializer.
So far, you've done a lot of changing.
I can sense you're wiser, it's a good sign.
Because of what we've covered so far in our sessions, everything made sense and checked out to be true.
Let's say almost everything.
Your predictions have been pretty accurate, though.
I still can't buy that Jesus can be connected in any way with UFOs.
Don't get me wrong, what you've said makes a lot of sense. But there's nothing out there in libraries saying, or even suggesting this.
Oh, we don't care. We don't want sensationalism, we want people to have faith and to make intelligent observations.
You did it, you're convinced.
Now you're flying in them.
I'm beat. Let's go to the beach and sleep for a while. After taking a little siesta by the water, we went out to eat sabish. Using the sky as a movie screen, we stayed up most of the night for some more lessons on the universe and the beginning of a new phase in my astral projection. The next day, around noon, we drove to several nearby towns, doing more Peruvian horse hunting. At about 6:30 that evening we were finished. As far as Roy was concerned, that took care of his list, plus the few extra ones I had found. Roy wasn't coming until February 5, 1975, so I told Rama that we would celebrate by going to a Chinese restaurant in Chiclayo. When we got to my car, I found someone had broken into it, taking my clothes, cameras, briefcase containing all the notes on Rama's sessions, my passport, and credit cards. Needless to say, I was fuming and uttering profanities in many languages. When I stopped to take a breath, Rama said, "Kids, hungry kids. Let's look for the little thieves and break their necks. We'll use your superpowers to spot the sons of..." "I will do no such thing," Rama said emphatically. "Why not?" I argued. "At least let's recover my documentation and passport. They're of no use to them if they're only hungry. My friend and brother, I know how you feel. I can sense it, I'm with you. But there are certain things you can't change. Are you saying I have to accept this? You already know God as a third force, the same way Job did. If you do things to upset the even frequency, you're Satan's prey. The heck with Satan, I want my briefcase. You're so angry you could kill, aren't you? Wouldn't you?" "No, I wouldn't. If my spirit were vibrating like yours right now, I couldn't be in tune to the same God that Jesus the Christ calls my Father in heaven. Being in tune with it is being able to forgive, taking life's adversities graciously, not cursing or wishing evil on your fellow man. When something terrible happens to you, instead of building up hate, you continue loving God. I was taught that in Hebrew school. Job losing his crops, his cattle dying, his children, and he never stops loving God. I'm telling you, that takes guts. What's the matter, big man? Don't you have any guts?" I didn't want to smile, but she said that in such a sarcastic way that my upper lip muscles started twitching my mustache. Being with her made it easier. We went to fill out a police report, and later that month I had to go to the embassy in Lima to get a new passport. When I arrived in the United States, I had to replace my J.D.'s, driver's license, credit and social security cards. By the time I had done all those things, I had learned a big lesson from Job. You love God no matter what, and you never have to worry because He will continue to provide for you. The kind of prayer I'd learned from the extraterrestrials was the most rewarding and fulfilling. The sooner you learn to practice it, the faster you start getting results. Early the next morning, the big UFO came to take us to Akaya. Rama explained that a Vimana is too small to attach a car to. I could see why. A Vimana is no bigger than a Volkswagen. It even has the same bell shape, except it's round. The following week, Rama and I traveled all over having our sessions, which were very interesting as well as enlightening. My learning was gradual. I would get visual images of times to come. Visions based on astral projection that took me inside the prophetic tarots of the Great Pyramid. I even got to be a god for one day, when we landed in a part of the Brazilian jungle near Mato Grosso between Peru and Brazil. The natives there received us as divinities coming from heaven. They are still waiting for the god Wiracocha to come and visit them. Rama and I told them that we were of the same family. Those were the most beautiful days that I can remember, spent with my friends from outer space. By the end of January, I called Roy to make arrangements for his coming to Peru. Rama was with me. Roy was pleased with my performance, and as a reward he said he had a certain type of motorcycle that I wanted, already sitting in his garage waiting for me. I was pleased and excited. On February 5th, he was coming to buy his Peruvian horses. Rama and I said so long for a while. I was to travel all over Peru with Roy. Everything went as planned. We managed to gather the horses together by the end of February, at a ranch outside Lima, ready to begin the exportation procedures. We had great times, wheeling and dealing with the owners and breeders of Peruvian Paso horses. I didn't notice any change in Roy's attitude. On the contrary, everything was go on our venture. On one of our trips, he took me to meet a friend of his. Being close to Rama had made me develop my sixth sense to the point of seeing auras. As soon as I saw this guy, I could sense his energy. Very uneven. I wasn't comfortable with his vibes. The man was a slick character. I didn't want to say anything to Roy because by now I was supposed to be loving rather than judging. He saw some more horses. I went back to Lima to start on some of my paperwork. 3 days later they came back with a truck full of livestock. The following day, Roy and I were to meet and discuss the final details of the shipment. When we did, he came out with a startling announcement. He said he decided to let his slick friend handle the deal. According to Roy, this man could do the job faster, better and cheaper. He assured me that our partnership would remain the same. I sincerely thought it was a good move. The guy was such a con artist that I didn't have any doubts that he would get the job done. Roy said that we'd see each other in the States when I returned. I drove him to the airport, and that was the last time I saw Roy. I spoke to him on the phone. After all, it took him over 8 straight months to get the livestock out of Peru. Roy ended up paying 8 times more than our original budget. The shady character put the blame for his failure on me, saying I used my pull with the Peruvian government to sabotage Roy's deal. He also created problems with the Association of Peruvian Horses in Peru. The former president of that association told me one day to my face that I had forged export documents. I argued with him that it was unnecessary for me to forge documents since I could get them legally, and fast, pointing out that I parted with the number one man in government and would have no problem getting my horses out of the country. Apparently my argument had a negative effect. The former president declared that I was an undesirable, and even went so far as to write to the American associations to inform them of my undesirability. I wrote a couple of letters, asking him to be open about any complaint he might have against me, but he ignored the situation in a most unprofessional way. It's a good thing all these trials and tribulations took place when I already had a solid foundation in the teachings of Jesus Christ. Every time something terrible happened, I'd just try to think about how Christ would have handled the situation. To do that, I had to accept Christ in my heart. It took a lot of convincing and studying, but after Rama had pulled a few numbers together, I had no other choice. About a week after Roy left Peru, I got a call from New York. A businessman named Danny wanted me to buy some Peruvian horses. This was an answer to prayer. It was the same day I'd been doing some reading about St. Jude, which said he was also the protector of those spirits who want to earn their living by doing honest work. If you're on good terms with this guide in the universe, you'll always have a job. This hit me as I was hanging up the phone after talking to Danny. I made the same deal with Danny that I'd had with Roy. I'd get his horses, and he'd get me a nice ranch where I could go and write this crazy book about UFOs. Danny's deal kept me in Peru until around mid-October of 1975. My relationship with the Peruvian government officials was better than ever, besides which I had friends from other worlds helping me. Every chance I could get, I went to see Rama. One day I met 3 of Rama's friends who came in a Vimana to Acaya. She communicated with them a lot faster than she did with me. These men didn't have any hair on their heads. Their eyes were the weirdest I'd seen so far, but full of love and warmth. While they had their conference, they would turn around and look me over occasionally. When they left, they seemed pleased that I had accepted and paid attention to Rama. They thanked me and patted me, putting their thoughts in my head to the effect, "Do not worry, brother, we have been watching over you for many, many years. Thank you for taking the time to write our message. We'll give you part of our strength." By early June 1975, I'd already seen and met all kinds of ufonauts. I always referred to them as angels or messengers. After the conference, Rama and I went swimming. She said her friends had already come up with a time slot for taking this book to a publishing company. You see, I couldn't have given you the date without their approval, she said. When's that going to be?